History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should never go untold. And as we keep reminding you, they really don't have to go untold if only people like you and I are willing to ask a few questions and invest enough time to let some of those remarkable memories emerge. Maybe you're going to get some time around a friend or family member this holiday season with some of those kind of stories to share. If so, why not seize the moment? There is no time like the present. This program exists, of course, to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey we embark on together, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm sure I'm not the first to say Merry Christmas, but Merry Christmas. You may have guessed that that might be the theme today, and indeed it is. Americans experienced four Christmases during World War II, but the last one is the one that generally receives the most attention, primarily because of the magnitude of the Battle of the Bulge, which was unfolding at this time of year 77 years ago and coinciding with the coldest European winter on record. I couldn't help but think of the Bulge this week and think of my late grandfather and all of his fellow members of the 6th Armored Division as I toured the Fort Douglas Military Museum in Salt Lake City, Utah. This time of year, there's plenty of snow on the ground in the Beehive State, and there were a good 4 inches of white stuff lining the long barrel of a Sherman tank at the museum. It was pretty easy to imagine what it must have been like for those cold, exhausted young Americans at places like Bastogne, Belgium, all those years ago. But it wasn't just what was happening on that frozen tundra during the Battle of the Bulge. There were some pretty incredible things happening in the air and at sea on that very same Christmas. Another one of my favorite museums is not far from where I live in California. Castle Air Museum bears the name of a Medal of Honor recipient who on Christmas Eve, 1944, lived up to the words of Christmas's namesake in John 15:13, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. That's what General Fred Castle ended up doing as he piloted the lead plane in a swarm of B-17s that had been waiting for the weather to clear so they could fly in support of the ground troops during the Battle of the Bulge. Castle's Medal of Honor citation reads, he was air commander and leader of more than 2,000 heavy bombers in a strike against German airfields on 24 December 1944. En route to the target, the failure of one engine forced him to relinquish his place at the head of the formation. In order not to endanger friendly troops on the ground below, he refused to jettison his bombs to gain speed maneuverability. His lagging, unescorted aircraft became the target of numerous enemy fighters, which ripped the left wing with cannon shells, set the oxygen system afire, and wounded two members of the crew. Repeated attacks started fires in two engines, leaving the flying fortress in imminent danger of exploding. Realizing the hopelessness of the situation, the bailout order was given. Without regard for his personal safety, he gallantly remained alone at the controls to afford all other crew members an opportunity to escape. Still another attack exploded gasoline tanks in the right wing, and the bomber plunged earthward, carrying General Castle to his death. His intrepidity and willing sacrifice of his life to save members of the crew were in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service. One of the last survivors from that Christmas Eve mission returned to Castle Air Museum this year and shared his story. It's a story Ralph Graham of Waco, Texas, a radio operator with the 487th Bomb Group, has written about in his book, 12 Minutes, The Untold Story of the Ghost Plane at the Battle of the Bulge.
8 days we would sit there with a float. Fog was so thick that you couldn't drive a truck across without some help, flashlights. All we could do is listen. And the report was bad every day, you know, because the Germans recognized that there was going to be hell that fog. We didn't know anything about it, but a young German scientist had discovered a weather condition out over the North Sea that indicated that that was going to happen. So the German command just took advantage of it and prepared everything. Tanks and everything. So when the fog came in that night, they took off and they pushed us back, and nobody realized how close they drive, like driving us into the sea. And of course, all of our, there were three armies there that was pushing back, And if they'd push us back, they would have delayed us. They might not have lost the war, but they would have delayed us a long, long time. And we were sitting there helpless. Mm-hmm. We got the report every hour, all the time during the day, where they were and what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
If they're making a stand or if they're still giving up, still retreating. Then that morning, the fog lifted just as fast as it came, you know. You could look up and, boy, and the stars were shining just like diamonds, you know.
This is Christmas Eve, 1944?
That was right. We didn't know that it was going to clear up.
Yeah.
We were sitting there waiting and waiting, and about midnight it did. And you could hear all kind of noises, telephones ringing and communications chattering, you know, and they're getting ready for everybody for maximum effort, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we knew we might as well get up and get our clothes on. They briefed us on what was happening, where we was going to go. And then from then on, my book takes over. But it didn't last too long. We pulled out on the runway to check, make our final check and found our problem. And then we had about 12 minutes to go back and get another one. And then from then on, it was a mystery.
So you're hitting it. One of the reasons the book is called 12 Minutes. So, and I've heard a lot of these stories over the years of, you know, if it didn't happen just like this, all these other things might have happened. So just so everyone understands and wants to buy the book and read a little more about it, you guys are on the runway. You're getting ready to take off. You're going to go support the troops at the Battle of the Bulge. And there's something wrong with the plane?
That's right. We had to go and pick up another plane that they have always have sitting there loaded, ready to go in case somebody has that problem. We didn't know what was happening because there was a new plane. The women had just flew it in from the States, hitting several others. We didn't understand. We didn't know I didn't know what was going on anyway, but later he told me what it was.
What was it?
You know, your alternator on a car, if it goes out, you don't have any power.
Right.
When you're sitting on the ground, you're on batteries. But once you're ready to take off, the batteries, you can't go with you. You're depending on electrical current.
Right.
And we checked them, and it always going to fall a little bit, you know. But this one went from peg down. That means you may not even get off the runway, depending on how much, what it was putting out.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't take any kind of a chance.
So you guys have to go back, and everybody gets off this B-17, you transfer onto another one.
Right, and it took about 12 minutes.
Uh-huh. How big a difference did that 12 minutes make?
Well, it made a lot. We started, I thought we ought to abort because you could take a pencil and a tablet and figure out yourself in small and just arithmetic that there wasn't no way we could catch them before they get to the target.
Because you've got a whole group of B-17s.
They're 40 miles ahead, and we'd had to make up that time, and we came 225 miles as fast as you can go with the load. If we had to increase that enough to get there, we wouldn't have made it anyway.
So you're not going to catch up and become part of the formation.
That's
just
right.
Not going to happen.
So we flew on. No, I didn't know what we were going to do. And we got a call from him.
From General Castle?
General Castle said, we're under attack. Well, the pilot said, well, now what we should do? He said, just join another crew. Well, it wasn't long after that till he was shot down. Tried to contact him, but he was done gone.
So if you had been with the original group of planes, you would have been part of that fighter attack as well.
That's right, and I'll tell you, as we go along, we went ahead and finally made it. It was pretty tough even to join another group because they don't like to see a single plane come up to join without reporting why you're doing it. Because the Germans did take one of them old planes that crashed and pick it up, and they'd come back and fly it and get into contrails and cause a lot of problems, you know.
Sure.
So we joined them, and it was, wanted to know what our armor was. We told him we were carrying 2 500-pounders. He said, that's what we need. We're going to knock a bridge out over a certain river. We didn't know what river it was because we wasn't briefed for that mission, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we did. We knocked it out and came back and finally went home. And when we got home, we found out what had happened, that they had said they'd knocked down 9 planes. Well, said 4 of them that was knocked down by the German fighters, and the rest of them had force landed or bailed out there at Liège. It was a little town outside Brussels. And we found out that they had made that mistake. They thought we was down because of our squadron commander who didn't fly that day. Looked at us and says, I'm looking at a ghost. Says, y'all was reported dead, down, or missing. Nobody knew whether it was which one it was. And as far as I was concerned, I tried to figure out why he didn't report it.
He didn't report us as missing,
mm-hmm. but he didn't report it that there was SD-8 planes because we was in the ninth.
You would have been the ninth plane, but instead there were only eight.
That's right. There's only eight because we was they thought they was right, and they were because there was only four reported back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take four and you add us, and that's five, and you subtract that from 13, you get eight. See? That's one of the reasons I wrote the book, and nobody ever knew the difference. They even made a report article on that mission, and they still reported nine planes missing. And then I got a little piece of that letter in my book. You can magnify it and see whether they still said nine planes missing.
That was the official Army Air Corps report of the mission?
That's right. It was such a mixed up thing, you know. In addition to that, we had 50 airplanes that came in and landed on ours. And there we were. Christmas was an eve. Christmas Day was next day, and they was boiling turkey and everything getting ready. But the confusion just wiped out any reason for any of them to ever doubt, other than that fact that he told us.
So let me understand. So you guys go ahead. You join another group. You're not with your squadron. You're flying with another group. You drop your 500-pound bombs on the target, and then you're flying back to your base. But when your pilot brings the plane down and you land, you get off, you guys see the squadron commanders?
Yeah, that's right. He walked into the headquarters.
Uh-huh.
Our pilot did.
When your pilot walks in.
He looked at, and they were good friends. He said, man, I'm looking at a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were already reported as quick as it happened that the one that took over reported the one that wasn't there. They knew who was flying, and they knew the one that joined them was four planes. That's how come them was sank. Well, there's nine planes missing. They didn't know. Say nobody had any idea that we wasn't in the group. Avon Castle didn't know until he called us and called everybody and said, we're under attack. And we was listening, and we called him back, and he said, just go on around. We told him he was 40 miles away. Just go ahead and join another group.
So, you've had a lot of time to think about this.
Absolutely.
I imagine you may have some different emotions for different aspects of it. What are some of the things you think about when you consider that twist of fate or the uniqueness of the difference that 12 minutes made in your life and others?
I wrote it down. It's in there. And I said this, the Germans had 8 days that they didn't fly. We had 8 days we didn't fly. You had any time to make proposals on what to do. The Germans prepared too, but when it came to be, the Germans was prepared. We wasn't, because who's going to send out the whole 8th Air Force being led by a squadron that didn't have one escort plane? Mm-hmm. But yet there was thousands of them in the area. But we didn't have one. Now, the tale was that they were supposed to join us at a certain point, but the fog had not lifted in that particular area, and they couldn't get off the ground. We should have had escort from time the wheels up on takeoff,
mm-hmm.
because we were leading the whole 8th Air Force in. Castle was.
How much did you know about him at the time?
I didn't even know him. See, he came down from wing headquarters to fly that one mission. We didn't know who was wing that, you know how many planes that is, or how many, that's three groups.
Right.
And three groups, you're talking about, we had 39 planes. Multiply that from three, that's over 100. And he was in charge of that. But he came down to fly that one mission, leading everybody in.
And he didn't have to.
No. He was a brigadier general.
Right.
He just made general.
What does that say about him, that he wanted to be there leading that mission, even though he'd already flown all those missions and accomplished so much and didn't need to be out there, right, doing what he did?
Well, they said that he had flown more bad missions than anybody. I said, well, you know, time will get you. But when he went down, he was very calm about what was happening. And then, of course, next thing we knew, they were bailing out.
And you were hearing this on the radio?
No, that's what people told us, you know, that was in the mission. In fact, one of them I met later on at San Antonio when we had a reunion was a waste gunner, I think, and he said he was one of the that bailed out. But they said he couldn't have never got out because both feet was on fire.
Mm.
But even with that, he wanted to guide that plane away from anything on the ground because we was over friendly territory, you know. He wanted to guide it into an open field. That's what he had told the co-pilot. He says, y'all go, I can't get out. He says, I'll take it in. That's what makes you want to keep this thing going.
That's why you're here.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason why we're here today.
So what do you think about when you see his name out there?
Well, that's where heroes were born. I mean, you think about it, the first thing you think about then is, I don't know how many we got, but there's a man that knew he was going to die, and he did what he did for a purpose. He knew he couldn't make it because he couldn't even walk to the bailout. So it makes you wonder. Even though I didn't know him, I had never known him, didn't know who that Castle was. Well, I learned to respect him, being a part of our efforts.
It's time for our first break, but more Christmas connections from World War II when we come back. As so many were freezing and fighting at the Battle of the Bulge, sailors in the Pacific were up against an enemy far more powerful than Imperial Japan. Typhoon Cobra, which claimed more than 800 American lives. Hear from one man who survived against all odds when his destroyer went under when this special Christmas edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. I always love hearing from listeners, and so many of you tell me you listen to Hometown Heroes while you're on the road. Nobody spends more time on the road than our friends in the trucking business, and if that's your business, I'm sure you know about Central Valley Trailer Repair. If you don't, you really should. Conveniently located near California's major transportation arteries, CVTR, has stockpiles of parts waiting for you in Fresno and in Stockton, with experienced service technicians ready to handle even the most difficult of repairs. Central Valley Trailer Repair is an authorized Great Dane sales, parts, and service center, and you can always find a huge inventory of new and used semi-trailers for sale too. Dry freight, refrigerated, flatbed, whatever you're looking for, CVTR has you covered. How about 24-hour emergency service? You bet. What can't CVTR help you with? That's a question I can't answer, so you'll have to ask them yourself at 1-800-877-8444. That's 1-800-877-8444. The website? That's simple. CVTR.com. For Central Valley Trailer Repair. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.